When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua. And happy Black History Month. Was that awkward?
Excellent. Excellent job. And see, and now you've already got the guests going. What have I willingly participated in again? Joe, you want to introduce our guest?
I would love to. Wish everyone, you know them, you love them. They are a two-time now Jeopardy champion. They are a professor of Africana studies. They have recently been to Aotearoa, parentheses, New Zealand. They absolutely hate it and love it when I text them that I'm watching District 9 and I miss them. It is Professor Dr. TJ Talley. Hello.
Hello. That's the best intro that I've had ever. Also, amusingly, I was in a bad mood last night. I had a very lovely time, but I went to Bear Night at the Marrow and I was there and someone had said something that annoyed me, and 5 seconds later, an actual lovely friend of mine came up to me, non-Black, and said, "Happy Black History Month." And I was like, "We don't do that." Which is wild, because we absolutely do. So first off, please feel free to wish Black people Happy Black History Month. But I was like, in such a mood. I like turned to them and I was like, "We don't do that." And then
I was actually, oh my God, this might... Our friend will never listen to this, but I was actually referencing a time last year when a mutual friend of mine and TJ aggressively wished TJ a happy Juneteenth.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't like, do that one.
Shook their hand, looked them in the eyes, and was like, "Happy Juneteenth." And I was like, "This is a little too get out for me."
Too get out. He was like, he voted for Obama a fourth time. Yeah.
Yes. But and then great. Proceeded to wish only white people happy Black History Month. Or no, happy Juneteenth.
And I was like, everything about this is the most. I was just like, what is happening? But yes, feel free. I love it. I love it. I wish you happy Black History Month. I don't even understand. 5 minutes later, I was like, now I can't take this back. I was just rude. For no reason. So even professors sometimes lose their damn minds and are like, why are we like this? Yeah. Well, my bad. Hi, friends. It's good to be back.
Yes, it's good to see you. I do have to quickly ask about District 9. What's that? Because that's a movie that I saw in the theater, and I was like, I can't ever watch this movie again. But it was so depressing to me, and so I'm just curious, what's the...
So I watched, I don't know, I was like really high, and I was just like, let me watch District 9, I miss TJ. And it's mainly because it takes place in South Africa, and it's mostly with like white South Africans, and I thought that like, and I know that TJ has like, you know, been and lived in South Africa, and I was just like, Vikus van der Merwe.
Nicholas van der Merwe. Yes. Ridiculous.
The prawns over here.
That's it. So he did. He was like, he couldn't stop talking about the prawns at District 9. The funnier thing for me is that District 9 came out while I was a graduate student living in South Africa on a research grant. So I was there for 3 months just intensively learning Zulu. And so I came back to the US and I hadn't spoken English widely for 3 months, and the movie had just come out, and I was like, what am I doing? I like went in the theater and I'm watching it, and I'm like so confused. Also because all the Africans in the movie speak Zulu. So then it was like very confusing for me to be in the theater and be like, I, what is happening? Also, Bronze, so many
people. I'm going to eat you.
This is a very heavy-handed analogy for racism.
Yeah. TJ, how many white men have you told that you were going to eat?
It depends. Do you mean it in a threatening way or Saturday night at Bear Night at the Marrow? Because those are different.
Six of one, TJ.
Half dozen of the other? Yeah, fair. We're going to go with a sensible 74.
Okay. That's the only reason why is because I was just, TJ was off living their best life. And I was like, I'm going to watch a District 9.
I'm going to disrupt this.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to disrupt myself.
I'm like frolicking in New Zealand and I'm like, yep. I laughed out loud. I was on the beach because of course I was, it was summer. And my friend is like, what are you laughing at? And I was like, my friend is high right now watching District 9. And it reminded them of me.
Yeah.
That is a terrible choice. This is the problem. See, this is like your freelance pot smoking or whatever it is you're doing here without any guidance, watching District 9 while stuff like that's the total opposite of how you want to feel.
You're not wrong.
Whatever. She wants to be independent woman.
Go watch The Crown instead. Watch a tedious historical sort of moment with a lot of
power. I did watch The Crown live and I was just like, oh, dearie. What is it? Sleep, dearie, sleep.
Sleep, dearie, sleep. The final episode. Yeah. The one where Harry dresses up like a Nazi. What a fun time.
Yes. What a flex. What a, like, why in the last
I remember
episode,
when that happened. Yeah. I was like, oh, now we're doing things that I remember.
Yeah. Yes.
I had just finished college. It was like the fall of 2005. And I was like, girl, what? What are we doing here? We don't need this.
Yeah. I was glad they covered it at least and talked about it on the show. But I was still like, geez, this is just everything about this. The choices. Anyways. Joe also mentioned Jeopardy, Geoparty, as we call it in the house, or Jay
Burns.
The party, which was fun to watch, get to see you on again. We watch Jeopardy. I can't say we watch it every night because really what we do is collect them and fast forward through the commercials. But we did watch you on there and it was fun. It was fun to see you again doing the thing, being smart.
It's wild. I never thought I'd be able to be back. And then I was there. Fun fact.
Well, you're great television, too. Yeah. It's a lot, right? They have a lot of people, I'm sure, to choose from. And it's, hey, this guy, we got to have this guy back.
Smart and personality.
Right?
Bizarre.
Yeah, he didn't pick a struggle. Oh, you're fine, baby. I just find it hilarious because it's like, when, it has been so long, to think about the movie that we're going to talk about, it has been so long since Joe and I saw this in the theater in May of 2019. I had never been on Jeopardy. I had never taken the Jeopardy test when we saw this movie.
And he had never pronounced the Jeopardy oath.
And now I have been on it twice.
How 3 years apart. Yeah. The river of life.
Wild. There was no pandemic. Yeah. There was no cats in the movie.
Yeah. This is true. Wow. It's a totally different world. We
5 years ago, we were all younger and less stressed. Yeah.
Wild. But no, it was fun to see you on there. Maybe. What is that like experience really? Is it really in time? What you're seeing is very live? Or I know they record a lot of episodes in a day, right? But still, does it move as fast as it seems?
It's terrifyingly fast, right? It's 22 minutes, right? The show tapes very quickly, and then they do pickups occasionally. So if Ken has to mispronounce something, or there's a debate over whether or not something should be scored, but never more than like 25, 26 minutes. And that's how they film 5 in a day, right? Wow. This tournament, the one I came back on in 2020. So the difference was in 2020, I was on, and it was during the Rona. So you had no guests. There was no audience. Everybody was masked. You were in, you were out, you were done. Lunch was in box sandwiches in the parking structure. It was wild. This time we had the full lunch experience. They put us in a $400 a night hotel in Culver City for 4 nights. You got to hang out with everybody else. My mom came and got to be in the audience. Like, it was great. The negative, of course, was that the COVID protocols were relaxed and I got COVID, as did 8 of the other contestants, but in September. Yeah. But it was nice because it was like this sort of moment where we filmed, good God, we filmed a terrifying number of episodes. There's 9 initial games, then 3 semifinals, and then 2 finals. So I can do math very quickly. 14. So there's 14 episodes. So they film them over 3 days. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Wow.
And you're just like, what? Right? So yeah, we did that in the middle of September. It was a blast. Ken is really fun. I was shocked at like how personable and fun he was. And the other contestants were a blast. So we have a group text. It's absurd. We still hang out with each other. There's one other Jeopardy contestant with a mohawk named Dave Rapp. And so we do a podcast that we recap. Yeah. We're the Brohawks and we recap.
Yes, the Brohawks.
It's pretty great. Yeah, I had a great time.
That's so awesome. It's nice that you got that opportunity to go back and have like more of the full experience rather than obviously the limits. Because people work really hard to get on that show. I know it's the tests and you're trying and you only get like one shot a year. Is that right?
Yep.
Like
once a year?
Yeah. So it's people, you want to have that full experience. So it's awesome that you got to be able to go back and do that as well and make those connections. It's so funny that you mentioned the mispronouncing thing because that's sometimes we laugh because Ken, it's like he gets people for pronunciation. And I'm like, girl. French. There are certain things where it's just, wow, he just took a stab in the dark. So I can't imagine the things, what they led on the show versus what they're like, let's redo that.
Yeah, they really will. And then it's like, now it's a pickup. You got to redo that one. I was like, whoop, there we go.
Yeah, that makes me laugh because it's just, because sometimes it's obviously people, it's they have the knowledge, they know what they're talking about because mispronouncing a word means you still know the word, right? Yeah. They have the knowledge. So it always makes me sad when somebody gets hit for pronunciation because I'm like, but they knew what it was.
Right.
But I couldn't do that job, obviously, because I'd just give everybody all the money and then points for everyone.
Yeah, then the show would be over. You'd be the
whole so smart.
Anyway. Yeah.
Everybody's
my favorite back. Video that's out there, some TikTok clip, is Alex Trebek saying genre.
Genre.
This like, genre.
Canadian. Getting him to say genre is one of the greatest moments.
That's hilarious. Anyways, I did just wanted to talk about that.
I love that you did. This makes me happy.
Yeah, it was fun to see you on there and doing your thing. And again, it's...
Thanks, baby.
Jeopardy's
I haven't seen you guys in... I still follow the podcast, right? I'm one of those people... It's on my Spotify. I'm like, what's up, podcast? What's up,
friends? Now, what are they talking about?
I'm like, what are my real-life friends doing on the internet?
We appreciate that.
It's so nice to actually be at least... In a sense, in this space with you guys. What a treat.
Like Joe said, it's Black History Month. And no, actually, I feel that's the thing. We're always like, God damn it.
Every time we
have to have TJ on to talk about something else.
That's right.
But it's so hard to resist Africana studies. Like we got
a whole job
to have you on.
I am
You on during Asian Pacific Islander History Month. How about
please
that?
Do.
We'll have
please
you
do.
On in May.
I will. I'll introduce myself in Fijian, right? I'll be like, Huna Vanaka. It'll be great. People already assume that I'm from Samoa or Tonga anyway, so that's fine. That is when I'm in New Zealand. People are like, oh, where in Tonga? And I'm like, no.
Are you the king of Tonga? Are you?
I am, actually. That is why I'm shaped like a pineapple. Yes.
Oh, the intricacies of race.
Yeah. AKA my career.
TJ, are you excited for the Secret Society of Magical Word I Won't Say?
No. I'm not 100% not. I'm absolutely not. I, like many, many a Black person, was really excited about the idea of it. And then we saw the trailer and there was this collective, aw, hell no, where we were like, wait, this is it?
It's a rom-com?
It's a rom-com where he's in love with this white lady? That's, huh? Yeah. One of my friends who saw it at Sundance was like, it's really life-changing. And I was like, is it though?
It's really life-changing.
And I was like, is it though? He's maybe it'll be a bridge. And I was like, this is not 2008, baby. We don't need this. It's fine.
Was giving for me, the response was giving Kerry Washington in Save the Last Dance, where it's Black men with the white women again. You're taking our men. And I'm like, oh.
I was like, yeah, there's no way in which this ends. Like, I was like, I don't see how this is going to be delivered in an effective or thoughtful manner. And so I vote no for all of this.
Do we know who the creatives are behind it or who's like actually making?
Then there's a fun thing in the Black community because it's the writers are biracial. I'm so sorry, but these are delicious Sour Patch Kids and I'm addicted.
That's totally fine. I was eating, what was it? Joe, your Cinnamon Toast Crunch cookies. We did a bit of an ASMR thing. So it's fine. We have a precedent for snacking on this.
I love it. But I believe
The creatives are biracial, so that's a whole thing.
Yep, that's a whole thing. For those of you who do not know me, hello, friend. I am a biracial. And I, this sounds like a Venice Film Festival. The biracial. I often find that when we think about lanes, when Black people in general are upset about things, especially about racial things, I, as a light-skinned biracial Black person, I'm like, this is where I silently learn and reflect, right? This is not where I'm like, I'm leading the charge. No. And so I looked at the showrunner, the producer, and I was like, oh, this can't. No. My job is to be very quiet right now. Very quiet. For I am not a magical Negro. I am not. Although I am a spicy wizard, actually. My desk nameplate actually says TJ Talley, associate professor / wizard. The problem is that they allowed me to put whatever I wanted on my desk placard, and they thought that I would be normal. So that's on them.
Sounds like it's on them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick turn a little bit. Have you seen American Fiction yet? I wanted to see that.
Yes, I have seen American Fiction.
What do you think of that?
Okay. It's great. It's cynical in some ways, and it really is. Damon Young, formerly from Very Smart Brothers, said really interestingly enough, he was like, I saw American Fiction, and I'm not sure if it's anti-Black. And I was like, yeah. It's part of it is this sort of almost producers-esque moment of, oh, I'm going to write the most stereotypical Black novel ever. And then, of course, everyone loves it. But it is an interesting sort of parody, but then also... My feeling, which other people had too, and I'm glad I waited to read these sort of reviews, is can we also take seriously the sort of mass-produced sort of Black pop-lit things that happen? Because these books do exist, right? And people read them, right? And how do we take that seriously? Right. I think the book does. I don't think the movie does that. But I, first off, have had a long-standing crush on Jeffrey Wright that borders on masturbatory fantasy, because I do feel that we share certain vague resemblances, and I'm always like, am I attracted to Jeffrey Wright, or do I just not have enough mirrors in my house? And either one could be true. Okay. Jeffrey Wright as a grumpy Black professor, I was like, okay, I feel trolled by this, and I'm into it. And Issa Rae is hilarious in it.
Yeah, I was wondering about, because I haven't seen it yet, I want to watch it, but I saw the trailer for it, and immediately I thought of Push by Sapphire, I thought about even The Color Purple, because obviously it shifts, and it made me think, is this something that's going to critique those works? What do we think about? Oh, yeah, I'm very curious to see it and be more curious about.
I'll be interested to see what you think about it. It is well made, and I enjoyed watching it. Would I watch it again? Probably. It's one of those that I would absolutely watch again. It's interesting because I also share other people's opinions, thinking about what we're going to talk about later, is that there are certain movies that I think are really good movies that I don't really ever want to watch again. I'll be very frank. I probably don't think I'll ever watch Get Out again. I've seen it. I got it. I deeply enjoyed it. I don't think I need to. You know what movie I did enjoy seeing again? Ma.
Yeah. Don't make me drink alone, TJ.
What?
I was not ready. I was like, the movie is not better. In fact, it may be worse upon a second rewatching, but it is infinitely more watchable.
We'll
save that for later.
To get into the conversation. So we're going to take a really quick break, and we are going to come back to talk about 2019's Ma.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back. As promised, we are kicking off another February dedicated to, February.
There it is.
That's the correct one. Nailed it. Devoted to further exploring the themes that we've talked about in horror noir, Black horror, Black history, the intersections. And today we are kicking things off with Ma, this Octavia Spencer-led psychological horror film directed by Tate Taylor, who also made The Help, which I'm sure we'll get into. Obviously, Blumhouse is on production. And it's about, if you come from like a small town like I did, a small town, Ohio, in fact, we all knew somebody like Ma. And we loved her because she let us do things that she shouldn't have let in her basement. But what happens when you piss her off? That's what we're getting into. That's going to be what we chat about today. As usual, Joe, we're going to start with, although I know you all saw this together, but as usual, we start with Joe's thoughts on Ma if you remember what your initial thoughts were, and then upon rewatch or wherever you want to go. I'm not going to tell you what to think or do.
I remember thinking this is very strange to be seeing a movie in a theater that's a horror movie without Joshua.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, shit. Okay, sorry. We got to go see this. Got to go see this movie. And then been meaning to talk about it for 5 years. Yeah. And then we never talked about it. That's but true. I did rewatch it before we hopped on here. And just, it is the best kind of camp. It is, it's Megan. That's the thing, is Ma tonally is the way I felt when I watched Megan. It's deeply funny in places where I don't think they were trying to be funny.
Yep.
And Octavia Spencer has a fucking Oscar. So does Allison Janney. By this point, Allison Janney also has a fucking Oscar.
Yep.
And just the people that are in this, the fact that we have two Oscar winners, Juliette Lewis and Missy Pyle.
Missy Pyle. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I remember watching it and then thinking, where are we trying to go with this? And then there's the reveal that happens with Ma back in high school, with Sue Ann's character in high school. And I was like, oh, now I get it. And then I remember thinking, this is what I love about horror movies, because in the morality, we talk about this all the time, in the morality of a horror film, you have the shittiness of the quote-unquote normie people in it are magnified in such a way that, like, they don't know how shitty they're being until but like the way it feels to the person who's the killer, the villain, it is proportionate to, in their mind, what is being done to them is proportionate. And that was really cool, because it's, no, she's not doing this because she's, yes, she may have some sort of mental illness, but she is also being very calculated in her revenge. And it just, and for it to also come out of nowhere, that's the other thing too. It's like, you stayed in the same town. You stayed in the same town as everybody, and have, and then just like all of a sudden you just go off the rails. I keep wanting to say you break bad, like with fucking Breaking Bad. But just, it's just, it's so wild. And I'm just like, oh, see, this is why I tried not to be shitty to people in high school. So yeah, I remember walking away from it being like, I can't wait to talk about it. And 5 years later, I'm very happy that we're going to talk about it now.
Again, I'm glad that we can. Yes, I wish that we would have talked about it then, just because it would be interesting to be able to look back on it 5 years later to see what we thought. But I think it actually I'm glad it sat out there for a bit, because as we were chatting a little bit before, the film now has this cult following and there's all this kind of new analysis on it that I do find exciting and very interesting. There's a lot happening in this movie, or there's a lot of ways we can talk about it, but let's go ahead and I want to hear Dr. Professor TJ's initial thoughts or wherever you're at.
Yeah. So in 2019, I walked out and I was like, what the fuck was this movie? It's just, I was like, this movie is a misfire on every level. It's like the only thing about it that's good is the acting, right? Octavia Spencer is phenomenal in it. Yeah. But again, Octavia Spencer was also phenomenal in The Help, which is also a terrible movie. So I'm like, in different ways, that's at least like a narratively held together movie. But I was like, what a misfire on every level, because Ma, I don't think I told this to Joe, but I explained it in the car with Holland at the time when we were leaving. And I was like, oh, this movie has the Magneto effect. And he was like, what? And I was like, I keep being told that someone is supposed to be the villain and the bad one. And I'm like, but were they wrong? And I'm like, half the point. I was like, we're supposed to think of this black woman as sociopathic, violent threat to like white teenagers thriving. And I'm like, but was she wrong? Was she insert currently problematic fave Nicki Minaj saying, but did I lie? Like that sort of moment, right? But like this sort of, I was thinking, this is the worst sort of marshalling of like anti-black woman tropes in this movie. I was like, why is she the villain? It's not until the end when she snaps at the final hangout and she's just literally abusing teenagers. And I'm like, oh, she's not the hero of this movie. Oh, because that was my initial feeling, right? Rewatching was interesting because I was Team Ma again, though.
Yeah.
The point, I was like already, okay, what the hell? Like, if it were me and I was those in that group of teens, when she takes the gun and points it to the white boy and just tells him to strip, I'd be like, okay, this is not a well person. We shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be in this thing. And that's the other thing. No, that's not true. I was thinking about like the adults who like look the other way, right? There was a bus driver that used to drive the kids in my village to high school. And he let the kids in my village, when it was just us on the bus, he let them smoke in the back of the bus. Which was just like the wildest thing, right? They knowingly were smoking cigarettes in the back of a school bus. And I'm just like, okay, this is a wild thing. But at the same time, it is, in the grand scheme of things that shouldn't be allowed, this is fairly benign. Fairly yeah. benign. If I get emphysema later in life, I'll know, I'll trace it back to this moment. But I just never had another anything.
Emphysema.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I never had that. This thing with the like adult who like is helping you do dirt. And I can't even fathom that. And so I can't even fathom that. And I can't fathom someone who is a well person that would do that.
Yeah,
I definitely wouldn't think that. Well, so again, this film really it was like, I think I text you like, this is like my worst nightmare, like having to go back and live in Ohio, go back to the small town I came from. Yeah.
Ah! You were Juliet Lewis in this.
Yeah, like, I was already.
They were living in San Diego.
Yes, I know.
They were living in San Diego.
This is the nightmare I have, where I'm back working in that restaurant. And yeah, but that was my experience. We did troll around town and you find somebody, some guy outside 7-Eleven. Hey, we've got cash. You could buy yourself whatever you want if you'll buy us a bottle of fucking Kamchatka or whatever the hell that cheap ass vodka was. To mix with our orange juice while we went to the park. Or more likely, my friend Nicole, she always had a boyfriend who was like 25, 30 when we were like 16. That fucking guy who would also have some extremely aggressive ex-girlfriend who would show up and we'd all have to hide in the bathroom from her, which did happen. I will always remember hiding. But you would find these people that it's like, why are you hanging around us? We're 6, but obviously we knew why. But so that's its own thing, right? But yeah, so this film brought back a lot of memories. Like my mom thinks I'm watching a movie and I'm, you know, what's that meme? 30 miles away in some stranger's basement. Yeah, that sounds about right. So this movie hit some things. But I will say it also reminded me, I think I texted this to you as well, Joe, of A Nightmare on Elm Street. So yeah. Like, why did Freddy Krueger hang around for 16 years or whatever, like in the dream world? He could have just like invaded the parents and killed all them, right? No, he like waited for their mm-hmm. children. He waited for that prime moment when they're all in puberty and their emotions and all the complexities that come along with it to strike. And that's what it feels like with Ma. She's just hanging out. It's very snapped. This is like an episode of that where it's like she just boiled and boiled in this small town. And then saw the opportunity to take it. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, it is. It's not a perfect film, story-wise.
It's a pretty perfect film, but except for plot and story and realism, right?
And like half of the actors. Yeah.
When
yeah.
she's driving her veterinary van and runs over Missy Pyle and says, fucking fan or something like that.
It's a big ass truck.
Wait. The blackest moment of this entire film is when she hits Missy Pyle with that van and immediately changes the radio to September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Did I fall off my goddamn couch this morning watching it again, yelling? I was like, do you remember? I was like, it's not ready. I was like, that is the blackest thing that has happened in a year full of Februaries. I was like, what?
The second blackest thing that, at least to me, sorry, as a non-black person,
please tell us.
As a non-black person. Yeah. But I feel like when, like, it's the montage of her, like, at the parties, like, interacting with all the teens.
Yeah,
and the song is Kung Fu Fighting.
Yep.
I was like,
also excellent.
What are we doing? Because it does, to a certain level, it does have a little bit of a blaxploitation type of feel.
It is.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then kind of to kind of have that be brought in with the music a little bit, and the music is like campy choices. Also, Missy Pyle is just like the perfect, like her performance the whole time is pitch perfect.
Yep. Yeah.
And like her name is Mercedes. Like
her name is Mercedes. Yeah.
It's just the best. It's just the best. Joshua, what did you feel about Juliet Lewis in this? Because I know you love a good diva. I know you love a 90s diva.
I was surprised to see her because I didn't know her and like Alice and Janney like popping up. I was like, oh gosh, I didn't realize they were in this. So I was like happy to see. I do Juliet Lewis. So I'm always happy to see her doing something and playing a benignly neglectful parent. Super fun. In that way of we've talked about before with The Nightmare on Elm Street. So overall, I enjoyed the movie. This is like another great, let's get a crack. crowd together and fucking watch Ma. It's hilarious. There are parts of it that are just really funny. And again, if I watch this with people that I grew up with in Ohio, we would recognize these. We'd be like, I know these people. This is like such a... Yeah, I don't know. They captured something that felt very real to me. But just shifting a little bit to talk a little about the film, production of the film. We have Tate Taylor on direction, which before we said he directed The Help, Get On Up. That's the James Brown biopic. He's a queer man, white man, who lives on the Wyola. Is that how you say that? Plantation? Wyola Plantation?
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Fascinating here. Also has a thing apparently for wanting to be involved and tell Black stories with Octavia Spencer. They're friends. So this film, the story was written, not from what I can gather, not intended to have a Black actress play the role. Most likely the writer intended probably just for some white lady to play it. That's my assumption, just because Hollywood is terrible. But Octavia Spencer at the time was like looking for something different. She and their friends, and he called her up. She didn't even read the script, apparently. She just heard horror, psychological horror. What do you think? She was like, yeah, sure, I'll do. Sounds great. I want to change up the roles. We have another example. When we talk about horror noir and these discussions of Black horror, we have two types, right? You have Black horror created by Black creatives who are whatever it is that they're talking about, how art talks about through their lens. And then you have Black horror that just happens to have Black people in it, but otherwise all the other creatives around it are white or non-Black. So it can really shift what this story is, which again, I don't know. If this had been, I don't know, who's like Octavia Spencer, who could have been as like a white woman that would have played this role, which again, it would have been as
Melissa McCarthy.
Her best friend, Octavia Spencer's best friend.
Right? But no, think about Melissa McCarthy as like this, yeah.
That's perfect. We can go that way. So we imagine Melissa McCarthy in it instead of Octavia Spencer, shift some of the themes or shift some of what we're seeing, right? But it matters. This is one of those films where it really shows it matters to be considered of these things, which is the criticism I read. It's, wow, Tate Taylor, I'm not sure he knows what he's doing with this by having Octavia play this role, because it does add these other themes that we can discuss. So just wondering what we think about that, the distinction between creating something like Get Out, which is very purposeful conversation being had, and the accidental stuff that maybe Ma is doing. I don't know. That's considering. I don't know.
No, I think that's a really good question in general, right? Because it's one of those movies that like, yeah, they were like, we want to do it. And Tate Taylor's, I want to do something fucked up. I think that was like one of the press things.
Yes.
Like, something fucked up. And Octavia Spencer's, I'm really tired of being pigeonholed in these feel-good white people movies. And they were like, what about this one where we give you a terrible wig? And she's like, I'm into it. Terrible wig it is. But at the same time, let's talk about this movie has an additional shading because of race, right? Mm-hmm. Sue-Ann's Blackness is important to the movie, but the writer and the director forget about it, I think, at multiple times, right? It is a meaningful subtext always, right? Mm-hmm. The prank that happens to Sue-Ann would be awful to anybody. It's a Carrie-style prank, right? But also imagine Carrie if Carrie were Black. Like, that is a whole different wrinkle, right? Yeah. Like, that deepens the... And so the trauma that Sue-Ann goes through is really specific because of her Blackness. And then it's only really gestured to twice in the movie, right? The way that race plays out, right? There's a moment where Daryl remembers that he's Black, the one Black kid in the group where the kid lies and says, no, we have to do a report about African shipping routes, slavery. And so he says, that's not. And then of course, later, the moment where the only kid that she doesn't actually truly assault is Daryl, right? She paints his face white and says, there's only room for one of us.
Only room for one.
But isn't it because it's like, those are the moments, right? And it doesn't, but what is so fascinating is the people who really like watching this movie and talking about it years later are Black women. Right. And it's because there's something about an unrecognized trauma and an unacknowledged trauma that I think is hitting with people, especially 5 years out. Right. Where they're like, and again, I'm wild of two minds about this. I don't think this is a good film, but I definitely want to keep. I will watch this film probably 3 years from now again and be like, I was excited that I got to rewatch it. I was like, come on, Ma. I was like, I didn't want to watch it. 20 minutes in, I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about this. I forgot. Julia Lewis. Allison Janney, why are you doing a dog blood transfusion? I have so many questions.
Yeah,
that was really fucked up.
Yeah.
Everything that happens also after that, where she's literally mutilating teenagers is also very fucked up, but just the playing with his genitals, which like kind of gave Django a little bit. It's that scene from Django where, but also just, yes, very hard candy. And the, to me though, and in the context of, in the context of horror movie morality, it is proportionate. Given the fact that essentially she was raped and assaulted.
She was assaulted
in front of the entire school, where I think it looks like she's the only black student.
Yeah. There are no black people in this town except for her and Daryl. And I'm like, and Jeannie, her daughter.
Yeah, we'll chat about that.
And then we get black Gypsy Rose Blanchard over here being like, and I remember, I think I told TJ this in the theater. I was like, oh my God, all this shit in the movie. And we got Munchausen's by proxy.
I was like, you were like, Munchausen, what is this, a Lifetime movie?
And it gave Lifetime movie.
It did.
Yeah, but it's so funny watching that because it's, never mind. And we don't need to get into DSM shit. I wanted to talk really quickly. I wanted to the point of what TJ was saying. So this is from The Trouble with the Movie Ma. It says, we've seen the effects from Serena Williams to Maxine Waters of a black woman gets angry regardless of legitimacy. It's out of line and needs correction. Kimberly Seals Allers, maybe Allays, writes in her article, black women have never had the privilege of rage. Our female fury is seen as threatening, not radical, as disconnected from reason, devoid of any intellectual underpinnings. The weight of being viewed as angry, often by white women, has prevented us from demanding an equal seat at the policy-making table. Sorry, real quick. When a woman gets angry in horror, this is an indication that she's finally going to start fighting back, that she's no longer a victim. But in Ma, it's a signifier that we, the audience, should be afraid.
Yep.
And then it goes on to talk about racist stereotypes of black women to get the audience to be anxious and afraid. Instead of relying on the archetype of the black mammy from The Help, Taylor has now moved on to the sapphire. He can't seem to get close to depicting black women with the slightest bit of humanity. Something to consider, just to go along with kind of what you were talking about with some of the critique from black women. That was from The Trouble with Ma by Isabella L. Price. That's hard to say. Isabella L. Price, who I think we've featured some of her work in the past on the podcast. So anyways, I just wanted to throw that in there because that was a little bit part of the conversation. To go with the idea that, what's happened to her? Because everybody, the guys, like, why are you still mad about this? Really? Fuck off. You know what? I'm going to fill you with dog blood and cut your dick off.
The dog blood.
I can't with the... It's one of the most fucked up ways to die that we've seen, I think, on Fright School is this dog blood situation. And that's saying something. We've watched like over 200 something, almost 300 episodes of this show. And that is a fucked up way to die. 13 ghosts with the closing door thing is also a fucked up way to die. But I don't know. It also just, you're stripping it of the humanity of humanity, right? Like you're equating him to this dog situation. And which is something that often, like, being angry is a human emotion that black women aren't allowed to have. Like, they're not allowed to access because culture, white supremacist culture, has dictated that it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And then you see just how dangerous it is here. If someone had just been nicer to her, then they didn't have to mess with anybody. And that's the other thing that I can't abide, right? It's just like, you really can just leave people alone. You can just leave people alone. We don't have to bully anybody. Right. And especially when you're bullying the only black girl, it's
right.
No, but it's not great. But and then when she opens up her yearbook and it talks about the different clubs that she's in, it's Sue Ann Ellington, blah, 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 blah. And then the bottom, animal husbandry. She was always destined to be a vet tech.
Yeah.
And then some backstory.
And that's how you get some drugs. You get access to the drugs to drug the children.
Yes.
Anytime someone's a vet tech, it means they're going to have horse tranquilizers. That's exactly what this means.
Long-term Janney says it too. Allison Janney says, take some horse tranquilizers then for your migraine.
Yeah. It was like, I love that they made her a one-note horrible character. And I was like, oh, that bitch going to die. And then she was like, oh, there it is. Yeah.
And we didn't even get to see that. I wanted to see her kill her. I thought that this would be really funny to see between the two. Like, I can, but whatever. It's
fine. No. We need to talk about the ending of this movie, right? The ending is bananas, right? Yeah. Bananas. Because it's where I feel like two different types of movies happened, right? The first movie was, this woman is And I think this is when it was before Octavia Spencer was written as the character, right? This is a sociopathic bad mom that is here to let you over and has and is just a complete sociopathic nightmare. Then
she's a cool mom.
Yeah, she's cool. She's not a regular mom. She's a cool mom. She literally says, "Are you kids drinking? I'd rather you do it here than in the house."
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Can we get a T-shirt of this cool ma?
I'm not a regular mom. I'm a cool ma.
Octavia Spencer and the
yep. I want it. I want it. Oh, I want eight of them.
Okay. Go ahead. So, I'm so sorry.
No worries, baby. So like that, but that's the one part. And then the second is this sort of idea of, okay, we want to give her full agency and be a real person and give her a backstory. So we give her this sort of very terrible story about sexual assault and trauma. And then we have to suture them back together at the end where the bananas part is like, okay, you're going to attack these children. But then the writing in for her to attack the stand-in audience surrogate, nice white girl, Maggie, I was like, Maggie is the least bad of these. Except for Daryl, who's literally not done anything but be black here. And yeah. And you stole Maggie's earrings. But like when she tries to hang Maggie and then when she tries to kill her own daughter, I was like, these are too far. These are too far. And then I don't know how you guys felt, but even Juliette Lewis's acknowledgement apology, I'm like, it's too late now, Juliette Lewis.
Right.
It's too late now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was such a bizarre. I'm sorry. I should have done something like, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. But you also now just tried to kill my kids. So I don't know what to do about this. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It is wild.
I feel like Promising Young Woman,
yeah.
The Carey Mulligan, Emerald Fennell film, I think that film did a better job of showing like how someone manages or is struggling to live with their decisions. Because there's the scene where Alfred Molina, in the most inspired cameo ever, Alfred Molina, who plays the lawyer who basically tore apart Carey Mulligan's friend in her sexual assault trial,
yeah.
And basically blamed the victim, all of those kind of shitty lawyer tropes with when it regards to sexual assault. And then like you can tell that he's like, I'm ready, do it. Like, I'm ready. Like, I'm a terrible person. I can't, this is the last case that I took type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that did a good job of showing how like you don't live with regret or how your yeah. actions affected another person. We don't get any of that here. Like,
yeah,
they're living in the same, like if I was a person who was like the perpetrator of and allowed someone else's sexual assault to happen, and I lived in the same fucking town as that person, that to me is just so wild. You yeah. see them, you would not even, maybe not even every day, but you would see them pretty regularly.
Right.
And then you have Erica.
Pets. He's your vet tech.
Yeah, your vet tech. And then you have Erica who like leaves, comes back, and we don't see any, we don't get the same kind of remorse that of all that situation. She invites her into her home and says, this is my friend Sue Ann. Like, girl, memory can't be that bad.
I was like, remember what happened to Sue Ann? Oh, you forgot? Did you forget, girl?
Yeah.
Y'all played carry to her.
Yeah. Yeah. You carried her.
Which again is a
what
really
would the black what would the black Carrie be called? What would her name be?
Ooh.
Carrie, but spelled K-E-R-Y. Carrie,
I mean, that would be like Washington. That would be fine. Because Luck Harry is too easy. Yeah.
Chuck Harry.
I like that one actually.
Wow. No, I was gonna say, so that Joe, what you just brought up and what you both have talked about is exactly why it matters whether you have a black or a white woman play this role. Because as yes. like as a black woman, when it's yeah, I'm inviting you to my house, of course I know what you did, of course I remember what we did to you, but you need to forget about that and not be angry about it anymore is like such a great parallel to the fucking world we live in that is constantly yep. delegitimizing this kind of anger, where it's like, why are you so mad? It yep. wasn't me. I didn't do this. I didn't. And then it's, oh my God, again, my mind is just blowing up, like with this Tate Taylor living on a plantation. This whole yeah. thing is like,
that's a lot.
But anyway, so it's just, it creates a bigger metaphor in this film of ignoring, denying, gaslighting
yeah.
black women, black people in general about a horrifying, brutal history.
Yeah.
So again, if it was Melissa McCarthy, the film would just have a totally different, and then we'd be probably discussing more. My God, sorry, Lily, come on, you're distracting me. Daryl's character. Then we'd be like analyzing that more, and I'd be curious to see, because Ma paints his face white, what was the original? What would that yeah. have looked like if Melissa McCarthy was the character?
Right.
So it's just like it. So it does. It really changes the dynamics of this movie and adds this other layer to it.
And that's
overcomplicating
horror. That's the thing, is that in this dimension, we can see some of Ma's actions with both Jeannie and Daryl as misguided protective.
Right.
She does it to Daryl to be like, you need to know that these people will not love you. I learned this the hard way. Stop.
Right.
And Jeannie, you have to be sick because I cannot have you build these attachments to people at school because they will hurt you. Like it's like a spicy version of Munchausen. It's not even just regular Munchausen where she gets to be a hero. She's actually, no, I need to protect you. It's a very
right.
weird.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thing with when discussing factitious disorder, but Munchausen is what people like. She's not doing it for attention to herself. So it doesn't even, it's like something else. And then, I realize, and once we know she's there, because obviously it goes through some time where we have no idea that she has a daughter in the house somewhere. She has to protect her from the horrors of this town instead of just fucking leaving or whatever else, which can also bring into a conversation about like mental health and about getting help, getting trauma processing and what that looks like in these places. I don't know. Wow. I'm so glad that we are having this conversation because it's so fascinating. I was just looking real quick at my notes. Oh my God. So sorry. Just random thoughts. Parrot Bay, Fireball, Aftershock, Bud Light, fucking teenagers. I'm like, yeah, that looks about right. Just get us some orange juice and some Coca-Cola. That was like a teenage party.
I was like, oh, these are grim. These are grim.
Yeah, I wanted to throw up the Aftershock. Oh my gosh, y'all. Jägermeister, Aftershock. I used to like chug that shit. It's so embarrassing.
Is Aftershock?
It's like melted fireball, like those fireball candies. Ooh. I'm pretty sure that's what, or maybe that was the fire water. But one of them was like, it looked like, I remember it mostly because I remember what it looked like coming back up, unfortunately. Yeah, Aftershock. It's like this red liqueur, like cinnamon, like melted.
Yep. There it is.
Yeah. What's that candy called? Hot tamales or like cinnamon fireballs. I love that stuff. Like cold, frozen, like shots of that.
Oh.
And then you're
gross.
Yeah, I know. I was like 18, 19. What the hell did I know about drinking?
But it's the same thing, right? It's like fireball. It's like a very specific subset of hot cinnamon liqueur. And that's when you drink things like that when you're that age. That's it. Right. Or Goldschlager. It's things that like Goldschlager was mine. Right? Yeah. 21-year-old me had too much ramen and Goldschlager and then threw up gold-encrusted noodles.
Yeah.
And that did it. That did it. Never again. Never again cinnamon-flavored liquor for me. Ever.
Yeah, I remember the last time that I had the Aftershock, the fire, or actually, I think it was the fire water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we're not doing this again.
Yeah. It's 2005 in La Jolla. I was like, we're never doing this again. I was a UCSD student. I was like,
yeah, that was probably 2005, Batavia, Ohio. Friend's bathroom.
I've never been that drunk. I've never been so drunk that I've been sick.
Oh, enjoy.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look at her. Oh, she's...
that's
not a statement of my morality and my superiority.
That's amazing.
You're like a glittery
I choose other things to be self-destructive. I eat a lot of cookies. Good. I'm not eating Aftershock. I'm not drinking Aftershock when I am eating an almond croissant. I don't know. I don't know what almond is in French.
Do you want me to tell you?
What would an almond croissant be in French?
It would be like a pain d'almond. Amande is just the word in French for almond. Amande.
Thank you.
I was trying to find... My one last thought I had here was I love the, like, it's like the whitest of the white people music opens this movie. No. It's like Mumford and Sons.
Yeah.
Whoever sings that Hey O song, whatever it is.
The Lumineers.
Yeah, the Lumineers. Mm-hmm. Yes. It just made me laugh because I'm like, wow, this is interesting choice of opening music.
It felt very much like the late 20-teens commenting on the early 20-teens.
Yes.
It's 2019, but it's a complete, it's like a movie in 1999 making fun of something from 1992. I was like, that's what that is right there.
Yep. That's a good point. Yeah, that made me laugh. Any other stray observations before we close the basement door on Ma?
I love the idea of pairing this movie with A Nightmare on Elm Street. I think because essentially it's the same story.
It's very.
And I love that idea. I'm curious now if I would love to see Ma, but with Melissa McCarthy. It'd be great. It would be called Ma'am.
It would be a feminist masterpiece. That's what it is. It'd be about sublimated women's rage. That's what it would be about. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
I did text TJ when I was watching this, and I said the funniest thing in my, because again, I am who I am and I grew up where I grew up. I keep thinking that this would be, we should make one, but Ma is Filipina and it'd be called Mom, come.
You need to go down to the basement to study. As like a voice note. And I'm like listening to the voice note while watching Ma. And I'm just like,
yeah, I'm like, shh, don't make me drink alone.
That's it. There it is. Knock. There's karaoke.
There's karaoke. Oh, or it would be like Mom, but it'd be like Mom, sir. He wouldn't be like, Mom, sir. Oh, Mom.
You are you alone, out of Mom, control. Sir? Out of control.
Yeah,
she
out of control. This, we created a monster.
A momster, if you will. And the big takeaway, kids, is don't fake having pancreatic cancer when people have figured out that you're lying. Just don't do it. That's how we know you're a bad person. Between you and Royal Tenenbaums, don't do it. Don't fake cancer.
Yeah, I do. I think that's the lesson to. I'm really glad that
sublimated black women anger and just don't fake cancer.
Just don't fake cancer.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do
don't Jesse Smollett your cancer.
Oh, don't not Jesse Smollett. No.
That was just for TJ.
You got it.
Amazing.
It was a cut right there. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. Potential sequel. In July 2023, Melissa McCarthy expressed interest in working with Octavia Spencer on a potential sequel.
No!
I'm sorry, no. I have to look. Melissa McCarthy is game for a Ma sequel. I would do anything with Octavia. July.
I'm looking at this article and it's amazing. The picture they put of the two of them together.
Hold on. Can you drop it in the chat, please? Because I need to see this.
I'll put the link because the picture is out of control. The picture that they have jerry-rigged of them together.
I know that they're like best friends. Like they
are
like super besties.
I would do anything for that glorious
They did that shitty
woman,
movie.
They did do that shitty movie where they were superheroes together.
Thunderbolts.
Yeah, it was not something good. Like that.
It deserved to be better. I was so mad that movie wasn't better. I'm like, really? Because the concept for it was like brilliant in my mind.
It could be like the sequel to Ma could be like Karate Kid 3, where like it's Ma's friend from college that's secretly a lesbian.
It's come to adventure.
Comes back.
I'm into it. Okay, do you see in the article, they asked Tate Taylor and he's like, my idea for a sequel. And he's like, my idea is that Ma's moved to another town and she has open houses in another city and she kills people in the open house. I think she'd be a real estate agent in the Pacific Northwest and just murder white people looking at McMansions. That's as far as I've gotten so far. I would watch it.
Wow. Yeah. But yeah, of course I would watch it, but that's quite a...
That's it.
That's a statement.
Wow.
We thank you so much for joining us.
This you're is always, Black History Month.
You're always a delight. Oh,
thanks, baby. It's a treat to frolic with you both. You are always such a joy in my life.
What's like going on for you? What are you working on? What's new? Obviously, you published one book here. My copy is just gray, so you can't
That's
really.
Perfectly fair. I love that book came out after we saw Ma. It came out over in 2019.
For people to.
Oh, queer and colonial and tall. That's me. I wrote it. So I'm working on my second book. It's called
Indigeneity and the Violence of Belonging in Southern Africa. It's not only a book title, it has a subtitle. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no worries. My next book is called Conjugal States. It is specifically about monogamy and polygamy in the 19th century. So it looks at ways in which like settler states make claims about monogamy and justify themselves as monogamous states against indigenous types of polygamy and fears of the Mormons. So I do it in South Africa, New Zealand, British Columbia, and Utah. So it's the four.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun gig. And I'm on sabbatical next year. I'm in the running right now for the Fulbright. If I get the Fulbright, I will spend January through June of next year, 2025, in New Zealand, learning Te Reo Māori and the Māori language and teaching a class and doing some follow-up work. But otherwise, I'll be just finishing the book next year. So it's really fun because I get to just be a weirdo that writes and reads about polygamy and bigamy cases. My family keeps wondering if that means that I want to be a bigamist. I remind them it means I don't want to get married at all, so it's fine.
There we go. That's fair.
You can't do a bigamy if you don't do any amies in the first place. So
yes. Here we go.
No gamies at all means that I'm fine. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's pretty much, that's one of the funnest things. So I'm looking forward to, starting in June, I will be on a year-long leave from USD, which is great. It's paid leave. I will be frolicking around. But yeah, I get to write and be sassy. I will not be black for pay in the same way because I will not be the director of Offer Promise Studies after that. I will just let that go. But yeah, it's everything else is going pretty well here. I just got back from, as Jonah talked about, a month in New Zealand, which was great. It's a place where I do a lot of my research and my work now. The other thing unrelated that I've just started reading doing is a book on sort of queer Pacific Island performance called Paradise Camp, which I will 100% loan to you when I'm finished with it, Joe.
Yay.
Paradise Camp. Oh, it's literally queer Samoa and other islands. It's in responses to Gauguin, as you see on the left.
Yes.
And like gender nonconforming, gender variant people actually doing their own riffs on it. You've got responses to all of these sort of like types of Gauguin-esque paintings that are then reimagined by queer Pacific Islanders. So yeah, this is a thing that I'm thinking through. I'm teaching a class called Queering Colonialism this semester, so we're thinking through it with this book.
Ah, wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
I love that. Oh,
so cool. Your life is so cool.
For like 15, right. Just slightly gayer. Everything else, like I did, that's just a side bonus. I was like, oh, that makes sense. But 15-year-old me is, if you'd asked me like what my dream life would be like, I would literally be describing this. So yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's so cool. Awesome. all right. Thank you so much for being here. Joe, as always, adore ya. And you, dear listener, thank you for lending us your earballs. And have a good night.
Hey, don't let us drink alone.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.